Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is Full Spectrum CBD? Full Spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than Full Spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, Full Spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 30th of September 2021. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. It's Thursday. Holy cow, it's Thursday already, and it's the last day of September. Sadly, I had to open my calendar function on my laptop to figure that out. I have no idea. I know February gets short shrift. Other than that, I don't know anything about the other months. If you told me they all had 31 days, I might believe you. Anyway, lots of stuff going on, plenty of things to talk about today. We're going to get to as much ground. I'm watching the congressional baseball game, and it's not, let's just say it's not a defensive battle. It is not a defensive battle in any way, shape, or form. These people are so pathetic. There's nothing worse than watching adults who don't know how to play stuff try to play stuff. You're just like, come on, dude. What are you doing? Anyway, it's fun. Look, I'm not exactly, Hall of Fame material, but Jesus, I know how to play the game. I certainly would go out there and not embarrass myself. Although, like, one guy, some Republican actually hit one out of the park. Barely, but it went out of the park. So that was interesting. They got this on Fox Sports 1. And you're just like, these people are not exactly the most athletic people in the world. I'm watching it happen right now. Anyway, we got a lot of ground to cover, so I want to get to it as quickly as possible. Don't forget about the Week in Effin' Review at patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. That's right. That's where I let it all hang loose. And you can also enter to win signed copies of books every week for the foreseeable future. I will be giving away signed copies of various books from people you've heard of, people you haven't heard of, people you like, people you hate. Maybe I'll even try and get rid of some unsigned books if you want. I got a copy of Molly Hemingway's new book already. I don't think it's out for a couple weeks, but I gotta keep that one, at least for now. I'll give it away later. Plus, giving it away is kind of douchey. If you like, you don't have to buy it anyway. I give away copies of my books, so you don't have to buy it. That's right. That's the book you can win this week, signed, and I'll notify the winner. The way to enter is explained at patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. You don't have to be a member to learn how to enter, but you do have to be a member to enter. So there's a post on how you enter, and then you have to enter. It's $5 a month, for God's sakes. Don't cost you much. And I just posted some pictures of the girls tonight as they were fighting in my office, because why not, and climbing on the cat tree, because why not, and ruining everything and trying to, basically, as a parent, you spend, I don't know, at least the first 4 years so far of their lives trying to stop them from destroying themselves, the creatures around them, you, just doing serious damage. Anyway, that's how I spent my night. That's why I need to take my Ancient Life Oil, my CBD oil, at AncientLifeOil.com. That's right. Go to AncientLifeOil.com. Enter promo code Derek at checkout. You get free fast shipping on already great products, great deals, wonderful stuff. CBD oil is amazing. Check it out. Do some research. See what they're saying about CBD oil. And then when you say, I'm going to give this a shot, that's when you go to AncientLifeOil.com. Enter promo code Derek at checkout. Click apply. You get free fast shipping on it. Top of a great product at a great price. And yes, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast for the curse program, and enter to win signed books and other. I'll give other things away in the future, I'm sure, as well. And somebody commented on the kids in my office and like the clerk's poster. I'll tell you about my office. Before we get into the show, let me tell you about my office. I'll be like that guy. Let me tell you about my grandchildren. Since I don't have grandchildren and can't even fathom the concept at this point, may not live long enough, who knows, to have them, I'll tell you about my office. It's just an old, it was storage. For the first year we lived in this house, it was just full of junk. And then I needed a place to record, so I cleaned it up finally. Finally opened the door. It's one of those rooms where nobody ever opens the door. Because it's like, there's just crap in there. I also found Quinn in here one time with a mouthful of Trivial Pursuit pie pieces. I always thought she was, oh, she's so smart for her age. And then you, what do you got in your mouth? And bleh. And you're like, yeah, okay, you're a kid. Kids are kids. I've got, like, my old producer, my old radio show gave me some framed records. Replacements, Let It Be, and the Beatles, Let It Be. They're hanging right in front of my computer. Then the Replacements, Boink, that I bought, vinyl. These are all vinyl. And I've got Replacements, Songs for Slim, that's autographed by the group. Framed over there. They're all framed. It's stuck in a frame. It looks like crap, but it's not professionally framed. It's just stopping it from getting damaged. But right in front of me, there's a MacBook, an iMac, like a 27-inch iMac that's, good Lord, it's going on 10 years old. And it still works. So there you go. But right behind it is a framed original piece of Chinese communist propaganda. It's pretty damn cool. I had a friend who worked for the Cato Institute when I was at the Heritage Foundation, and she was going to China for something or other. And I said, she asked, do you want anything? You want anything? And I usually ask people to, like, find me baseball cards, like old baseball cards, like if you're going to Europe, if there's soccer cards or whatever. I just kind of like that kind of stuff. And I said, well, China's probably doesn't have that, but if they had some old Chinese communist propaganda, I'd like that. So it's a poster. God knows who the guy on the right is, but the guy on the left is Mao. It says something in Chinese across the bottom in really small print, and they're both smiling and couldn't be happier. Mao probably ordered the death of the other guy at some point in the future. But it's a piece of Chinese propaganda that I did have professionally framed, which is very cool. Then there's like a canvas picture. You know, you can take a real picture and get made it on canvas. My wife had that of me and Quinn and Bailey put up there. So that's hanging up there. There's a picture of Duke Snyder at the old, I think it was the Polo Grounds, I think was where the Brooklyn Dodgers play. And it's autographed Duke Snyder. I don't know why. Duke Snyder has always appealed to me. So I got a Duke Snyder autographed picture there. And then I met Bono. I told you the story of meeting Bono. I've got the framed, I think I told you the story about it. I met Bono in the Senate, in the hallway one time. He signed a piece of paper, a pad, a notepad. Not a full-size notepad, but it just says United States Senate, Washington, D.C., and the zip code on the top. And he drew a picture, and he signed it for me. That was pretty cool. And there's a picture of Willie Mays doing, you know, making the catch, hanging below Bono. And then right to the right of that, my wife and I went on multiple trips to New York back in the day before kids, and we saw a play called Lucky Guy, written by Nora Ephron. My wife is a big Nora Ephron fan. It was produced after she died, but it was about, I can't remember, some guy who wrote a column for the New York Daily News or something like that. It was a good play. Tom Hanks starred in it, along with a whole bunch of people. It was only for like a limited engagement for like 1 month. And it was, there's a poster signed by the whole cast, which I bought at an auction for an AIDS charity. So I got to write it off on my taxes. But it's got like Peter Scolari, who is his partner in the one where they dressed in drag, whatever that's called. A whole bunch of people that you've heard of. If I can just find Maura Tierney, Peter Scolari, like I said, Courtney B. Vance, Christopher McDonald, who's Shooter McGavin. Awesome. Peter Garrity, like a whole bunch, they all signed it. So I bought that. It was like $300 or something like that. And I have that framed. Then there's a poster that my, or not a poster, a puzzle that my parents made. They were got into making puzzles and like gluing them together. And my dad made frames for them. I don't, they're cool, but I don't know. My parents made it. So it's hanging on my wall and it's going to hang on my wall forever. Then there is a, probably, you know, in my office, hidden. I don't think my wife would let me put it in the kitchen or anything. But there's a Clerks poster that my friend George got me when he worked at a movie theater back when Clerks was out. So it's original. Gave it to me for my birthday, which is kind of a cool, thoughtful, and incredibly cheap gift. There's a framed Paul Westerberg poster. There's another framed Replacements album. There's a, we went and saw All the Way, the play All the Way with Bryan Cranston on Broadway. And so we got a program of Bryan Cranston signed as LBJ. And then I've got some paintings that I did that are crap that are hidden in my office. On top of a TV, a dresser, because my wife takes up all the dressers in the bedroom. There's only one, but she takes the dresser in the closet there. So I get dressed downstairs. And that's it. There's crap all over the floor. Someday I'll clean it up and then I'll take some pictures so I won't be embarrassed by the room. Anyway, way more information than anybody needed. I can already feel the emails of people bitching about, nobody wants to hear about your kids. Nobody wants to hear about this, that, or the other thing. Tough. That's what the fast forward button is for, ladies and gentlemen. You can get all the dry news of the day right off the bat from the robots and the ragers. We'll give you the news of the day at a pace that's enjoyable. And as such, let's get on with the show. All right, we've got a lot of ground to cover and less time than usual to in which to cover it, because that's just the way of life. We got some doozies of audio of you that we're going to get to probably right at the start. The generals yesterday. The general can... What if... Don't you feel safer going to bed at night knowing that these people are in charge of your security and that Joe Biden ultimately gets the final say? It's amazing. I was watching this testimony. This is the only thing that was really newsworthy out of the whole thing that I thought, watching this, because members of Congress are just, what's the word I'm looking for that's FCC compliant? No, they're just god-awful at questioning people about things. They're horrible at investigation. I don't know how you have to be wildly incurious to be any less good at asking questions. There's just no other way to describe. You have to be just disinterested at all. Like, oh, I could go outside and talk to my neighbors about their azalea bushes. I would not give a single half of a damn about it. I could. That would be about as interesting as the members of the Senate yesterday questioning these generals. And it's a real case study in how time, it's not time heals all wounds. It's that time just marches on and people don't give a damn. The attention span, yes, Afghanistan, the horrible withdrawal from Afghanistan, the 13 dead Americans, the 200 dead Afghans, the fact that we left so many people behind, we have no idea, upwards of thousands people behind, of Americans, not to mention all the Afghans that worked with us, that helped us, that have the targets on their back, the people that Joe Biden swore up and down he would not abandon. He abandoned right away because he'd set a deadline. And that was like a month ago. Literally a month ago. August 31st was the deadline. We're not even to the end of September yet. It was and people forgot. People don't care. People have moved on. So much so that as Republicans and Democrats, all of whom expressed outrage and consternation just that month ago, are now going, yeah, that's horrible. Anyway, what else is happening? And that's kind of what they're doing. You're like, what? What? Well, there is things to be outraged. There are things that is things. There are things to be outraged about. But unfortunately, and fortunately, look, if tragedy strikes, you want life to move on. You need life to move on. Otherwise, you just dwell on your worst day forever. Nobody wants that. You'd get stuck and your life would be miserable. But when bad things happen, if you move on from them and never think of them again, not dwell on them, but never think of them again, you're going to repeat them. And the people who did those bad things will get away with it. Joe Biden will get away with it. Joe Biden will not be held to account for his incompetence, for his senility. This is a prime example of senility. You could think it's incompetence all you want. Maybe it is to a certain extent. But it's incompetence to any extent fueled by senility. That's where we want to go with the audio to demonstrate what our government is and what our government has become. Now, I'm trying to think, do I want to start with Biden saying something and then be completely contradicted by, yeah, let's do that. Joe Biden back in August Murray sat down with George Snuffleupagus and they had their big powwow. This was the attempted damage control. He ended up doing more damage. This was where Joe Biden lied and said, we'll stay there until every American is out. Only after like three rounds of questioning from Stephanopoulos. And then he didn't mean it. He left them all behind, but he finally had to commit to that. Well, in that interview, George Stephanopoulos asked the president whether or not anybody had advised him, because, you know, the thing was a complete disaster. Like somebody, if everybody advises you for something that is a complete disaster, advises you on the side of something that ends up being a complete disaster, you need everybody replaced. Everybody's got to go. There's a count, and like everybody's got to go. But if it was half and half and you just made the wrong decision, then it's on you. Joe Biden seems to sort of recognize that as much as somebody suffering from dementia can recognize that. And so he tries to hedge his bets and pull everybody onto his side. Stephanopoulos asked him whether or not anybody advised about maybe a different path, maybe leaving some troops there at Bagram, a very securable place, the air base there. And Biden kind of gets, and this is the problem. The first pass, and thank God for Stephanopoulos, and we'll never say that again, but thank God for Stephanopoulos's pursuit of clarity on this issue. Because Joe Biden's first pass is dismissive and would normally work. But for some reason, George Stephanopoulos was going for something more. And so he circled back and asked him again. And this is where Joe Biden contradicts himself and contradicts what we now know to be reality. Listen to Joe back in August talking to George Stephanopoulos saying, nobody advised me to keep troops in Afghanistan at all.
Your top military advisors warned against withdrawing on this timeline. They wanted you to keep about 2,500 troops.
No, they didn't. It was split. That wasn't true. That wasn't true.
They didn't tell you that they wanted troops to stay?
No, not in terms of whether we were going to get out in a time frame, all troops. They didn't argue against that.
So no one told your military advisors did not tell you, no, we should just keep 2,500 troops. It's been a stable situation for the last several years. We can do that. We can continue to do that.
No, no one said that to me that I can recall.
No. They said that, no, they were split, he said at the beginning. But then it became, I can't remember. I don't know. I wasn't even in town that month. What do you want from me, man? I don't know. No, nobody said nothing to me. It became more hardened. He contradicted himself a little bit. But he made a very definitive declarative statement there at the end. No, nobody said that to me. That I recall. There's the qualifier. He tosses that in just the last minute. Well, either he's lying, which there's a lot of punditry going on social media today from the Blue Checkmark Brigade about whether or not Joe Biden is lying. Oh my goodness, if Joe Biden is lying, that's horrible. Joe Biden has just been caught in an unequivocal lie. Will the media go after that? No. The more disturbing thing would be, Joe Biden is lying. There are two choices. Joe Biden is lying or Joe Biden genuinely doesn't remember significant and important advice that his military advisors gave him at a crucial time of history. I don't know which is worse. I'd almost prefer Joe Biden lying than he doesn't remember. Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics, good guy. I know him. He says, to be clear, the issue isn't that Biden didn't listen to the generals about troop levels in Afghanistan. It's that he lied about it to the American people. Like, no, did he lie or did he really not remember what it appears every general advised him? I'm not sure which is worse. I'd rather have a president who lies. I can understand the lie. You got good advice and you took bad advice, your own. You said, thank you, everybody who knows something about this. We are, you've all uniformly told me one thing, but I'm going in a different direction. Okay, that's fine. That's a decision. I can understand why you would want to lie about that and go, oh, crap, everything went sideways. I really screwed this one up. I should probably find some cover for this. And then he just tries to deny it. He lies about it. That is understandable. It's more of a teenager kind of mentality, but, you know, than a 78-year-old man's mentality. But still, it's understandable from a human standpoint, especially an adult who has been in public service, quote unquote, their whole adult life, never really worked in the private sector, never really been all that responsible for anything personally, that when personal responsibility comes along, they're uncomfortable with it and they try to dodge it. I get that. What's scarier is that this old fool could really not remember. He might not remember that literally every one of his military advisors who has direct access to the President of the United States told him one thing and he did something else. And he's sitting there going, well, everybody said this. And then you say, well, no, nobody said this. Well, not that I remember. Because yesterday up on Capitol Hill, really the only moments that matter from the testimony, the commander of Central Command, CENTCOM, General McKenzie, General Ken McKenzie, he was asked pretty much what George Stephanopoulos asked Joe Biden there. His answer was quite different, as you might imagine. Here's his answer.
Again, I won't share my personal recommendation to the president, but I will give you my honest opinion, and my honest opinion and view shaped my recommendation. I recommended that we maintain 2,500 troops in Afghanistan.
No one told me, not that I remember. Oh, there's the guy in charge of Central Command. He might be somebody the president might pay attention to. Now, a guy the president has defended, who I believe committed, court-martialable offenses, maybe even up to treason, General Mark Milley. Mark Milley. Now, he's the darling of the left, or at least he was, until maybe yesterday, depending on how much of hay can be made about this and how much of the American public can be made aware of this. Here is General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the guy who has direct access to the president, talking about what his advice was.
Yes, my assessment was back in the fall of 20, and it remained consistent throughout, that we should keep a steady state of 2,500, and it could bounce up to 3,500, maybe something like that.
Okay, now those guys were not appointed to their positions and not put in their positions by Joe Biden. Maybe they're secret Republicans, even though Mark Milley can't turn down a phone call from a reporter to badmouth Donald Trump, right? Just can't do it. But now we have the Secretary of Defense, Mark Milley. This is a Biden appointee. This is not some evil partisan Republican who puts their pinky up to their teeth and goes, well, isn't that special? No. This is a guy that Joe Biden chose. He's asked whether or not the advice of those generals and other generals whose advice was similar, that they established yesterday, made it up to the President of the United States. And under oath, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, said this.
Did these officer and General Miller's recommendations get to the president personally?
Their input was received by the president and considered by the president, for sure.
Oh, it was received by the president and considered by the president for sure. Yet he told George Stephanopoulos, nobody said nothing to me. I wasn't even in town that month. What are you talking? Afghanistan? Is that like a country named after a blanket? What's going on? No way. No, never heard of it. Wasn't even in town that month. Again, is Joe Biden lying or is Joe Biden senile? Neither option's good. One's better than the other, but the other one's more likely than the one. Then you get to Ginger Goebbels, ladies and gentlemen. Ginger Goebbels at the White House. Jen Psaki was asked, naturally, as you got the generals who advised the president, at least the generals we know of who advised the president, all up on Capitol Hill going, no, we told Joe to do things differently. We told him to leave some troops. We told him to keep keep to 2,500 to 3,500 troops up there. No big shake. And Joe, memory still ringing in our ears of him saying, nobody told me that. I wasn't even in town that month. What are you talking about? Well, that begs the question. With these guys up there on Capitol Hill under oath saying they told the president something the president insists that he wasn't told, there's a disconnect. Is there somebody else advising the president of the United States? Seems like a pretty important question, I would think. You're sitting there, you know, president denies this happens. It clearly happened. So if there's somebody else advising the president, who is advising? Who else did the president hear from? Where did the president, if he says nobody told him anything, who are these people that told him the exact opposite? Who backed him up, basically? That's what they're asking. Who backed him up on what he did decide? Ginger Goebbels will not say.
The president said his military commanders were split. We now know that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Milley, the head of CENTCOM, General McKenzie, and the commander on the ground, General Miller, all recommended that the president keep 2,500 troops. So who in his military advisors told him it'd be fine to pull everybody out?
I'm not going to get in specific details of who recommended what, but I would reiterate a little bit of what I conveyed before, which is that there were recommendations made by a range of his advisors, something he welcomed, something he asked them to come to him clear-eyed about, to give him candid advice.
I'm not going to say who it was. Who? Of all the people, everybody, we've got them on record. They're under oath up there. The people that we know of who are the inner circle of the President of the United States when it comes to advising him on military matters, at least from the military. I'm sure Jill's got opinions on what he should do, but God forbid if we ever follow what Jill recommends. Or, I'm sorry, Dr. Jill, the Reverend Dr. Jill. But it just seems weird that somebody else, if Joe didn't hear nothing, wasn't even in town that month, somebody might want to touch base with to find out who else is advising the president. Because again, if the people in the positions of trust, and that's who these people are, CENTCOM commander, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, et cetera, if they are offering the president of the United States advice that he's not taking, that he doesn't trust, that he needs to establish some sort of, I don't know, end around his official advisors, that's a problem. Somebody should probably replace these people. You know, the president of the United States might want to say, you guys, thank you for your service, but we're no longer going to need your services. I can't trust you. I believe differently. That's not what we're talking about here, for some weird reason. Because just last week, what did we get about General Milley, at least on General Milley's behalf, the White House said that, oh no, the president has absolute faith in General Milley. That was, of course, when the revelations about the Bob Woodward book came out and General Milley was seen as and admitted to yesterday under oath, admitted to doing an end run around the power structure in the Pentagon and in the White House and calling his counterpart over in China to say, don't worry, don't sweat it. If we ever decide that we're going to start a military action against you, I'll give you a heads up. I'm on your side anyway. You know, I love my Kung Pao chicken, so I will give you a heads up as to what we're going to do. Seems rather treasonous to me. He also tried to intervene and insert himself in the chain of command for the nuclear launch codes. And after all of that came to light, the White House did what? They insisted, no, the president of the United States has full faith in General Milley. Even the president said he had absolute faith. It wasn't just his mouthpieces. It was the president himself coming out and saying, I have full faith in General Mark Milley. Nobody was held to account. And yesterday, what was amazing yesterday is Milley admitted, yeah, he talked to Bob Woodward. And he talked to like three or four other people that had written books. Like, when do you have time to general? No wonder our military is so awful at completing their missions. The generals are too concerned that their names are spelled properly than they get in the papers. Maybe keep your mouth shut. This honor, duty, country, and all of that. Maybe you should really rethink, General Milley, what that means to you. Of course, all of these people would really need to rethink what this means to them. And the simple answer is it means nothing to them. It means nothing to them. They only care about their agenda, period, end of story. And whatever they've got to do, they've got to lie, they've got to cheat, they've got to steal, they've got to scam, they'll do it. They want to badmouth this country, they'll do it. They have to do it. That's who they are. So you can sit there and you can watch the president of the United States and go, he's not telling the truth. But you really should wonder, he's not telling the truth. Is he lying deliberately? Or does he just not remember? Is he that far gone in his dementia that we don't know, that he doesn't know? The answer is we don't know. Those are the questions that should be asked. Would be nice. Would be nice if we had an honest press corps. I'm looking at what this administration is doing. Kamala Harris, 12 hours ago, is out there tweeting this. And this is amazing. This lie I talked about yesterday is spreading. And they just keep telling it. And then they keep twisting it. And they keep turning it. And they just go, well, let's throw another lie on top of another lie. It's not just the military. It's their quote-unquote Build Back Better agenda. Their Build Back Better agenda. You ever notice the Democrats' agenda never, ever once involves empowering you, enabling you, getting the government out of your way and saying, go for it. Here you go. You know how to fly, fly. Wherever you fly to, how far you fly, how high you fly is up to you. But come on, we have faith in you. You can do this. Their agenda never involves that. Their agenda involves telling you, you forget it, you can't fly. You don't see it up there, but there's glass, there's netting. There, you're going to bonk your head. You just can't get out there. I mean, but then you say, wait, there are birds up there beyond where you're telling me the glass is, where the netting is supposed to be. Like, yeah, but that's different. The system is rigged for them. They're different types of birds. They can soar. You can't. You're a sparrow. What are you going to do? You can't go too high. Come on, quit whining. Just recognize that the only way to get that high is to cast a net over them and bring them down to your level. No, because you'll never get there on your own. That's how the left works. Kamala Harris yesterday tweeted, quote, our Build Back Better agenda will lower healthcare costs, reduce the cost of childcare, cut taxes for the middle class, and make big investments to fight climate change. How will we pay for it? By making the ultra wealthy and large corporations pay their fair share. That's her tweet. There you go. There's her tweet. Now, yesterday, Democrats were all arguing, this isn't going to cost you anything. This isn't going to cost anybody anything. In fact, it's just going to be, it's a magical bit of accounting where you take $3.5 trillion out of your left pocket and you put it in your right pocket and somehow it costs you, it's just all paid for. And you're like, what? None of that makes sense. Because it doesn't. Unless they've got a unicorn that poops gold. You can't take money out of one side of a lake and dump it in the other side of the lake and go, look, I'm filling the lake. It's all a lake. And to sit there and now say, go from this won't cost anything to we'll make the ultra wealthy and large corporations pay their fair share. It's a family making $400,000. Now, you sit there and go, well, $400,000 is a nice chunk of change. And $400,000 is a nice chunk of change. It is a nice chunk of change. But is it ultra rich? Is it ultra wealthy? Are you living high on the hog? I tell you, I watched the Million Dollar Listing New York and Million Dollar Listing Los Angeles. You know, talk about ultra rich. Here's a $27 million house. Here's a $30 million apartment. Blah, 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 blah. Somebody making $400,000 a year isn't going to be able to rent a place like that, let alone buy it. That's what the monthly rent would be. So is that the ultra wealthy? What about a family where the mom and dad work? They're both making a decent living. They're both making $200,000. They ultra wealthy? It's not relative to you, remember. It's just in general. And oh, by the way, again, corporations don't pay taxes. You can raise the tax. Well, how many times have you heard? Think of it this way. You don't even have to think of it in terms of realism. Think of it this way. How many years in your lifetime, and I'd venture all of them, have you heard Democrats talk about how they need to make corporations pay their fair share? They've got to raise taxes on corporations. It's a real easy thing to do. You say we're going to raise income taxes on people making $100,000 or more. The odds are pretty high that you at least know somebody who makes $100,000 or more. You may well make $100,000 or more yourself. That personalizes it. That puts a face on it, a human face, and you're going, well, I don't want to I don't want to screw Earl over. Earl didn't do anything to me. So if you say a large corporation, but you don't really define what a large corporation is, and it's really pretty much any corporation, then there's no face on it. And you certainly don't think of it as the company you work for or the company you started and own. You think of it as, you know, General Motors, Ford, Amazon. You think all those big evil companies and you go, well, to hell with them. I don't really care. Let them do it. Except that they don't really pay taxes. You pay taxes. If you buy a new F-150, you're paying all the taxes on it. And the corporate sales tax, that's factored into the price. That's how it works. If you go to Amazon, they always say Amazon pays zero in taxes on X amount of dollars in revenue. Well, there's a difference between revenue and profit, right? There is a difference between revenue and profit. They're counting on the economic illiteracy of the American public. And sadly, the American public is largely economically illiterate. They should know. Democrats should know. They've educated the vast majority of the American public. They're responsible for it. So to the extent that they're historically illiterate or economically illiterate, it's part of the plan. It's all by design. But if you have $1 billion in revenue, that sounds pretty good. But what if your costs are $1,100,000,000? You have $1 billion coming in. Did you make $1 billion and you're not paying any taxes? No. You didn't actually make a profit. You actually had a loss. Also, thanks to the tax code, that's not really what happens with Amazon, but thanks to the tax code that was written by and large by Democrats to be so confusing, if you have $1 billion in revenue and let's just say 200 million of that is profit, you know, pretty healthy profit, and you can either choose to give that money out in dividend form to shareholders, or you roll that into the company again. Reinvest that. If you give it out as dividends, you take it as profit to pay it off as dividends, then you pay taxes on it. Then the people who get it pay taxes on it as well. But if you roll it back into the business, you're not taking a profit out of it. You are reinvesting that money into it. Again, this is perfectly legal and a good, sound tax policy. That's why Amazon doesn't pay any taxes. Amazon isn't out there finding, you know, they didn't hire the monopoly man and he's sitting there twisting his mustache going, "Mwahaha, what can I do? I'm screwing everything. How can we cheat the American people today?" No. They're following the law. They're reinvesting their money into the business to grow the business. Buying, you know, you got $100 million in profit and you don't take it, you throw that back in the business, you can buy more warehouses, you can employ more people, you can grow the company. Pretty simple, pretty basic stuff, pretty smart stuff if you want to grow your company. Democrats are counting on you not knowing that. Democrats are hoping to God you don't know that, that you don't know anything about this. I've never seen a political party so dependent upon keeping people as ignorant as humanly possible. Never seen it. Most people, most parties throughout history, they want the exact opposite. They don't get that with the Democrats. I want to shift to COVID again and touch on something that is becoming a theme. As various arbitrary deadlines loom for the mandates for the vaccine, the real-world implications, real-world consequences are starting to become clearer to people. And it's always amazing to me when people are shocked to find out, oh my goodness, things are not going as smoothly as possible, as smoothly as we thought they would. It's the law of unintended consequences, or were they? You know, I hear people grouse and complain about, oh, the president's executive order exempts this and that and the other thing. And the president's executive order isn't actually in place yet. It's a workplace order that has to do with OSHA. OSHA hasn't written the rules, Occupational Health and Safety Administration or something like that. OSHA hasn't written the regulation yet. There's nothing in place. If you're a government contractor, if you are a government employee, the rule isn't there yet. Why, we don't know. Probably because the lawyers are going, how are we going to figure out this one? How are we going to do that? And it's going to be interesting to see how they do that. Twitter, for a week and a half, has been declaring they've got to post up Biden's vaccine mandate for workers is supported by legal precedent, experts say. Well, in a shocking twist, those experts are all liberals. So, yeah, no kidding. But that's the world that leftists live in. We'll see how it plays out. But the federal government hasn't implemented anything yet. The private sector is following the government's lead and working preemptively because they know at some point OSHA is going to come up with this regulation. So they're trying to do it. Plus, they're panicked. They also want to be seen as woke and compliant and all of that. So they're scrambling to implement their own mandates as soon as possible. And then there are other people who are out there. And this is the conspiracy theory nuts. Don't listen to the conspiracy theory nuts, people. I told you this 2 weeks ago. I forget, some blog post somewhere, and it was going around social media. Oh, the federal government has ordered everybody to get the vaccine. Biden did. But the post office is exempt. Why do you think that is? Well, because they have a very powerful union and a very specific contract. And Congress is exempt. Why do you think that is? Well, it's very simple, too. They're co-equal branches of government. The executive branch can't impose its will on the legislative branch, even though it seems like it can sometimes. They can't. Oh, the Supreme Court is also exempt. Again, see what I just said about the legislative branch and the ability to impose your will on other people. It's really pretty simple. Joe Biden can order the executive branch to do an awful lot, but he has no sway over the legislative branch. He can't say, I now declare Congress to work only 3 days per week, even though they pretty much already only work 3 days a week. They get to set their own schedule. You've seen president after president grouse and whine and complain that Congress is in recess while they should be doing X, Y, and Z. Now, they have no say over it. I agree, Congress should have been doing X, Y, or Z, but they have no say over what Congress does or doesn't do, period. End of story. It's just, you've got to have a basic understanding of how our government functions and what separate but equal or co-equal branches of government actually means. And so many people don't. So you either, you know, you can be ignorant yourself and spread ignorance, or you can know the truth and spread ignorance anyway because you think, well, that will get people riled up. That will help them do my bidding. Either way, it's wrong and it's stupid. The mandates are going into place, but they're already in place where it matters most, and that is in private companies that didn't need the government to come in and tell them to do it. They were already out ahead on this. That's where the legal battle is. The states and localities as well, our federalism system, the arguments that will be made largely against Joe Biden's mandates on private companies that do business with the government or of a certain size will be fought out on two fronts because the states, many states will be imposing those same restrictions. So you can maybe make a federalism argument against the federal government coming in and saying that, but you're going to have a tougher time with the states. So the consequences are multifaceted and coming at businesses, the private sector, and the public sector from many, many different places. And we have what we call the law of unintended consequences. This is from the San Diego Union Tribune. About 90% of San Diego police officers who responded to a recent survey said they oppose COVID-19 vaccine mandates, and 65% of them said they would consider quitting the force if the city were to impose a requirement. Quitting the force. 65%. Now, I don't think that 65% will actually quit the force, but if half of those people quit the force. You get 35%, 30% of police officers in San Diego to quit the force. How's that going to work out? Again, the law of unintended consequences, when just last year, these were the best among us. The frontline workers, remember, they opened up the windows of their apartments in New York City and applauded every nurse and doctor out there. Oh, yay. And the teachers, give them more. And oh, yay. All of that. They're not doing that anymore. A year later, they're going, comply or die. Comply or get fired. That's it. And in New York State, you comply. And if you don't comply, you will get fired and you will not even get unemployment insurance. They really want to hurt you if you don't comply. Down in Texas, from KCBD, the TV station down there, administrators at rural hospitals say they're frustrated and concerned after President Joe Biden mandated all hospital staff get COVID-19 vaccine. Jasper administrator there at a hospital, rural hospital, says losing 25% of his unvaccinated staff would probably shut them down. 25% of your staff. Imagine losing 25% of your staff at a rural hospital. How do you survive that? You cannot survive that. According to a 2019 report from the Texas Organization of Rural and Community Hospitals, 26 rural hospitals have closed in Texas in the last decade. The organization cites the driving force behind the closures is Medicare cuts totaling $50 million a year and a $100 million a year underpayment plan by Texas Medicaid. See? Government. Oh, you got Medicaid. That's great. Can't find a doctor to take it, but you've got Medicaid. You're now covered. Don't you feel better? This is government and how it works. The administrator said nursing agencies are pulling staff away for a bigger paycheck. So losing any workers hurts rural hospitals. Says vaccines are highly encouraged, but not all of his staff has received the shot. 20% of my staff, probably 20-25% of my staff will have to go away if that's the case, if they impose these mandates. So you got government messing with reimbursement rates, and you got government mandating behavior that some people simply don't want for whatever reason. And you're going to end up decimating rural hospitals. I can tell you why the Biden administration doesn't care. Because you sit there and you go, how could they not know this? They know. They don't care. There's a huge, huge difference. They don't care because those communities that are rural in America, that's where those evil, evil Republican voters reside. That's where bad things are allowed to happen, where bad things are encouraged to happen. That's where Republicans are. And who cares what happens to Republicans, right? Right? Even Republicans in blue states, where you're probably going to hurt some Democrats, overwhelmingly blue states like New York. KIRO, Channel 7, upstate New York, Lowville. An upstate New York hospital said it will pause the delivery, right? Pause the delivery of babies in 2 weeks because of a spate of resignations by maternity unit workers who are objecting to the COVID-19 vaccination mandates. Well, now you can't. The governor said, we're going to order the National Guard in there. They'll take care of it. Having been through two births as an observer, a close observer, not that close of an observer. I was looking at the wall during the business part of it. But I can assure you that baby delivery is one of the most terrifying things a doctor can do. Any medical professional can do. They have to pay through the nose like you wouldn't believe for liability insurance. That's why you sit there and you go, well, cost of having a baby is so expensive. Why is that? It's pretty simple, really. Because anything goes wrong and everybody in the room is going to be sued. Everybody in the zip code is going to be sued. That's how it works. So to lose people in a field that it's already hard to attract people to, because you say, well, you could make $1 million a year as a doctor delivering babies. Ooh, that sounds pretty good. Yeah, your liability insurance, your medical liability insurance is going to cost you about, $500,000 a year. So I make $1 million a year on top of that after? No. You make $1 million, but then you got to pay $500,000. Okay, that kind of sucks, but whatever. But don't worry, then you get to pay taxes on that million too. Huh. Then it suddenly becomes, now you begin to see why there's a whole bunch of areas in this country where there are no doctors willing to deliver babies. They just don't want to. People, the thing is, people have to realize, and having been a health policy analyst, and being a human being sometimes, I can understand, but there is a difference between malice and an adverse outcome. Adverse outcomes happen. You could say this, you come in with a broken arm. And the treatment for a broken arm is you set the broken arm and you put it in a fiberglass cast and there you go. Well, you do that 9,999 times and it goes great. But that 10,000th time, there's just some sort of weird reaction, some kind of infection. Something happens out of the ordinary. Something goes wrong. And somebody loses that arm or loses their life because of an infection or whatever. Or they lose the feeling in their arm because, you know, you couldn't, didn't know the nerves were in there or whatever, they were severed, whatever it is. People have to recognize that the doctor didn't go in and say, what I really want to do is cause this guy to lose his arm. I can't wait. I love getting people to lose limbs. Sometimes bad things happen. If there's a magic pill, take an aspirin. And it will cure whatever it is. It'll work for most people. But there will be some people for whom it does not work. It's not as the doctor was trying to kill you. It's because, well, nature, DNA, God, fluke, nature, whatever it is. Instead, we now have, instead of just going, well, that's terrible, we now have a society, a culture that tells you, and if you watch daytime TV, you know this to be true. Every other commercial is some lawyer saying, has anybody ever harmed you? Looked at you cross-eyed. We'll sue them. They'll pay. They'll be destroyed. Have you ever hurt yourself and stubbed your toe? Yeah, man, I was hammered like you wouldn't believe, and I got into a fight in a shoving match, and somebody pushed me over, and I fell, and I hurt my arm on somebody's lawn at a party once. That guy needs to pay. Why? Because you were a jerk? Because you were stupid? I don't know why a lot of this stuff is going on, why this country would, how this country could be a lot better. Take a look there, but I'm straying. Up in New York City, the most progressive place in the world, you can't get babies delivered in upstate New York. Good luck with that. And in New York City, you can't get them educated. Now, you couldn't get them educated beforehand really all that well, but they're going to lose some city schools. Some city schools. Now, just listen to this. So they'll say, well, 100 in New York is not that many. No, per. Some city schools could lose up to 100 teachers and staff next week due to COVID-19 vaccine mandates, union officials revealed Friday. This is the New York Post. United Federation of Teacher President Michael Milgrew and Council of School Supervisors and Administrators Mark Cinzano, whatever, some Italian name, held a joint press conference to warn of staffing shortfalls and the city's lack of preparedness. Department of Education had said that 13% of city educators remain unvaccinated and face removal from payroll Tuesday, while Milgrew put the number at 5 or 10%. But even at the lower figures, he cautioned that thousands of teachers would become ineligible to work after Monday night's vaccination deadline. Again, the rule of unintended consequences. And just last year, these people were our best. They were the best among us. They were heroes. Now they're public enemy number one. They're probably running around with that Brian Laundry guy trying to evade capture. It's pathetic. It's what a difference a year makes. I'm going to talk about, while we're talking about the COVID heroes, the frontline heroes, there are other people who are now going to find themselves being goats, going to be, it's the Democrats are going to be presented with a choice to, it's going to be uncomfortable for them. And I love it for one. The NBA is not requiring players to get vaccinated. Now it's going to be, it would be tough too. They have the players union and the players are wildly powerful there. They refuse. If LeBron James says what he's, if LeBron James comes out in favor of it, they might have been able to do it. But yesterday, LeBron James came out and he announced that, well, he's vaccinated, but he does not support the idea of vaccine mandates. This has to be a very big disappointment for the left. They love pointing, LeBron James is a parrot, a megaphone for things like the 1619 Project and for Black Lives Matter and whatever lie the Democratic Party wants to put together, particularly on race. The billionaire LeBron James will be there going, oh, my people have been oppressed for so long. Like, really? I'd take 25% of your oppression there. I'd take $250 million, LeBron. And would that we were all so oppressed the way that you are. But he's a high school graduate. And do you really think that the best high school basketball player of his time and maybe ever was really going, look, coach, I know we got a big game tonight, but I've also got a calculus test. So I'm not going to make it to practice this afternoon. And I might not even want to play because I've got to. Do you really think that was the case? I don't think that was the case. Especially, I mean, considering what happens in D1 universities for the students, the student athlete, they send people to take their classes for them. Really kidding. You think it's any different in high school? Give me a break. But LeBron James came out and said he's not for vaccine mandates, that people sounding, the very, very liberal LeBron James is sounding very, very libertarian at a minimum when it comes to vaccine mandates. Listen to him.
But you don't think the issue is important enough for someone with your stature to speak out on it?
You know, we're talking about individuals' bodies. You know, we're not talking about something that's, you know, political or racism or police brutality and things of that nature. We're talking about, like, people's bodies and well-beings, you know. So I don't feel like, for me personally, that I should get involved in what other people should do for their bodies and their livelihoods. It would be me talking about somebody if they should, you know, take this job or not. Listen, you have to do what's best for you and your family. If they should relocate, you have to do what's best for your family. So I did for me and my family. I know some of my friends and what they did for their families. But as far as speaking for everybody and their individualities and things that they want to do, I don't feel like that's not my job.
He's very interested in individual rights there. Collective guilt, individual rights. Oops. But that's beside the point. LeBron James is now going to put Democrats in a position where they go, well, they tout the hell out of him every chance he's useful. Now he's not useful. Now he's actually damaging to what they want. Compliance. It's not about the vaccine. It's about compliance. It's about control. You get people to jump through one flaming hoop, you can get them to jump through a whole series of flaming hoops. So LeBron is now sitting there going, the Democrats are going to attack LeBron? Can we attack LeBron? I don't know. And I don't know if they can or not. They are dependent on the black vote. If they go after LeBron too hard, they could lose some of it. Although I doubt they'll lose LeBron. LeBron is committed. And again, he's a high school graduate that didn't really attend high school. I doubt that he's going to particularly care. He wants to be popular. He wants to be down with seemingly being on the right side of history. So he'll be fine with it. Now, other players in the NBA might not have such a good go, such an easy go of it, because even if you don't follow basketball, you know who LeBron James is. I do not follow basketball. I do not like basketball. I find it to be probably the most boring sport of all. The only thing that matters is the last 2 minutes, and that takes as long as the rest of the game. Each team gets 5. I never understood. Somebody scores a basket, and you take the ball out from underneath your hoop, right? But somebody scores a basket, you call timeout. There's like 2 minutes left, and you got to formulate a plan, timeout. Then you suddenly get to take the ball in at half court. How does that work? Why does that work? It doesn't seem to work all the time. It's just annoying and stupid. Each team gets far too many timeouts, and it's boring. How many times can you? If you're 7'2", you damn well should be able to slam dunk, all right? The rim is only 10 feet tall. 7'2", you put your arm up, you're 95% of the way there. You should be able to just stand on your tippy toes and dunk. So I have difficulty being impressed that somebody who's 7 feet tall can jump up and slam dunk. So I just don't watch basketball. That being said, I do know who LeBron James is, obviously. Michael Jordan, you couldn't escape when I was a kid. And Kobe Bryant, everybody knows. Magic Johnson, Larry, the big names, everybody knows. I don't know who Jonathan Isaac is. I really don't. I don't know if he's any good or if he's just, you know, a decent. I mean, look, you got to be a good player to make it to the NBA. But I don't know if he's a superstar or what. He apparently plays for the Orlando Magic. Sounds like a smart guy. On vaccines, he has given this thought. He, Jonathan Isaac, will not have the same sort of cover that LeBron James will. Because, again, if you don't follow, I don't even know if you follow the NBA if you know who Jonathan Isaac is. I really don't know if he's any good or not. But if you don't follow the NBA, I'd be willing to bet that you don't know who Jonathan Isaac is of the Orlando Magic, unless you live in Orlando. So if the plus LeBron has going for him that he did say that he got vaccinated. Jonathan Isaac announced that he did not get vaccinated. And he was asked about this. So he doesn't have the cover of, well, I did it. And he was asked about why he wasn't vaccinated, because what sports press conference shouldn't involve vaccine messaging? God, where are we as a country? What the hell is going on? But his answer as to why he's not vaccinated and why he doesn't want to get vaccinated, why he has no plans to get vaccinated, pretty damn good. If I do say so myself, listen to him.
What is it about the vaccine that makes you hesitant to get it?
I would start with I've had COVID in the past, and so our understanding of antibodies, of natural immunity has changed a great deal from the onset of the pandemic, and is still evolving. I understand that the vaccine would help if you catch COVID, and you'll be able to have less symptoms from contracting it. But with me having COVID in the past and having antibodies, with my current age group and physical fitness level, it's not necessarily a fear of mine. Taking the vaccine, like I said, it would decrease my chances of having a severe reaction, but it does open me up to the, albeit rare chance, but the possibility of having an adverse reaction to the vaccine itself.
That guy has done his research. That guy is giving the message that should be the message. Look, it'd be better if you got the vaccine, all right? It'll help you. It'll definitely decrease the odds of you ending up in the hospital. But if you're young and healthy and fit, which, you know, being in the NBA, not too many chunky NBA players. They think of chunky NBA players, you think of Shaquille O'Neal, but Shaquille O'Neal was not a chunky NBA player when he was an NBA player. Sitting on his butt being an NBA commentator, you know, I suppose you avail yourself of the craft service table a little too often, a little too frequently. But this guy is actually playing. Good shape. Healthy. Already had COVID. Antibodies. He understands that the data. He seems to have read the studies, or at least about the studies, that show that if you have the antibodies, you've probably got a, you know, 27 times more antibodies. I think it was that one study out of Israel. 27 times the antibodies than from the vaccine. You know, vaccine certainly better than nothing. Certainly a lot better than nothing if you've got comorbidities or something else. We really still don't know exactly what it is that causes people to get really, really sick. Just simple, simple stuff. But you've got a situation where this guy knows his stuff. How do you combat this? How do Democrats, they want to. What does the White House say? What is Ginger Goebbels, if she's asked about this? They'll probably ask her about this because they'll try to avoid asking any real substantive questions. What do they say? Can't say much. Jonathan Isaac, another thing about Jonathan Isaac, that during all of the protests and all the kneeling, he refused to kneel during the national anthem, citing his Christian faith. Which, that's the only other reason I've heard of Jonathan Isaac. I don't know. Seems like a nice guy. Certainly seems like a smart guy. Agree with him or disagree with him, he's done his research. He's done his research. LeBron James, again, sounds like a libertarian now. Look, I can't tell people what to do with their bodies. I don't want to do that. It's not going to be, you know, the reporters desperately want both of these men to justify it. The reporter asking LeBron James, how do you justify not using your position of power to do this? You realize we're going to have to be critical of you. We're going to have to criticize you. We're going to have to go at you. And Jonathan Isaac, the reporter, wants to know, why do you, I don't think the reporter was expecting that answer. I don't think the reporter was expecting, and Jonathan Isaac went on for like 2 minutes. I don't think the reporter was expecting Jonathan Isaac to have done his homework. To have done, like, look, it doesn't matter. There's a chance of an adverse reaction to the vaccine. I understand that. I'm not going to put myself through that. Right now, I'm very fit. I run probably, you know, 5 miles, 10 miles. I don't know how long you run in a basketball game, but it's a lot. A lot of cardio in basketball. You're pretty well fit. Maybe he has something else, but he's already lived through COVID once, and he's got the antibodies. So he probably doesn't, if he had serious comorbidities that were going to kill him, I suspect he would have discovered that horrible fact when he had COVID. So what do Democrats do? This is their bread and butter. They like using NBA stars for their messaging to their advantage. Democrats love using black men to their advantage. So what do you do? I don't know. It's going to be fun kind of watching them try and figure it out because they can't go after LeBron. LeBron is LeBron. LeBron is untouchable. Everybody else, fair game. But they run risk of being called racist. They are racist. I mean, why shouldn't they be called racist? But it'll be fun to watch in any event. I will enjoy it anyway. Just a quick reminder or clarification about what I said earlier now that I'm looking at the Twitter machine because the House Judiciary Committee says that a whistleblower alleges that the Border Patrol agents have been given official notice that they must be fully vaccinated by November 2021 or face termination. Be interesting to see how the union responds. And, you know, you can't fire government workers for incompetence. I'm not sure that you can fire them for noncompliance of a vaccine mandate, but maybe. There's a better argument to be made that the president can order executive branch employees to be vaccinated than there is private sector. But there's a difference between the private sector and the public sector. OSHA regulations I was talking about earlier that haven't been written deal with the public sector. So when Joe Biden says any company with 100 or more employees, he's instructing OSHA to do that. That mandate is still a ways off because they haven't written the regulations. The executive order, the president can take executive action against executive branch employees immediately. He's the boss. He's the head of the executive branch. But he still can't go after Congress. It's not Congress is exempt. It's that the president doesn't have the power to go over Congress. Now, frankly, Congress could mandate that that congressional employees, that legislative branch employees be vaccinated. But that's, I'm not sure if it would be Nancy, if Nancy Pelosi can decree it. I know Nancy Pelosi can decree that you got to wear a mask on the House side. She couldn't have any say over the Senate side. So you literally walk from the Senate side with no mask. As soon as you reach that, you know, middle equator of the Capitol building, you got to put a mask on or face massive fine from Democrats because of Nancy Pelosi's decree. I don't know if the same can be done or said about vaccine mandates, whether or not it would take legislative action, whether or not it would take even just each branch, it's a bicameral Congress. So the Senate controls the Senate and the House controls the House. So maybe the House could pass a bill that, or a resolution that says you have to be vaccine mandated. Or maybe Nancy Pelosi could decree it. Although, if Nancy Pelosi could simply declare it to be, then somebody should ask her why she hasn't already if she is so supportive of vaccine mandates. Somebody should probably, because these Democrats are all in favor of Joe Biden's action, since the executive branch cannot mandate things for the legislative branch, because they're equal footing. Somebody should probably ask them whether or not they support the idea of having one themselves. And if not, ask why the hypocrisy. Like, I haven't seen Chuck Schumer out there going, we tried to pass a vaccine mandate, but those evil Republicans would not let us do it. You know, he would. He'd be out there. It would play well in New York, so of course he would do it. But it costs the executive branch. The president does have some power. It should be challenged. And I don't know. The Border Patrol does have a union, so I'm not sure how well this will stand up to that. But apparently, as of last night, the official order went out that Border Patrol has to be fully vaccinated by November. Illegal aliens do not. Illegal aliens do not even have to be tested for anything. They just come across, they could be hacking up a lung, and they say, not interested in being tested, and they shall be waved through. But the Border Patrol agents, that's different. That's completely different. They might not vote for Democrats, whereas the illegals will. Something to chew on. Pathetic. That's our government. That's our president. I want to touch on the, maybe that's the wrong way to put it. Touch on the R. Kelly thing. Remember R. Kelly? Singer. I think he did the song from was it Space Jam. I believe I can fly. And then he did a whole bunch of other things. He had some really weird... Something went off with this dude. He had some... I remember his videos for Keep It in the Closet or something about a closet. And there was 27 parts or something absurd like that. It was just ridiculous. And each one was terrible and worse than the other. And his music was... Like, I Believe I Can Fly is a good song. If you're into, like, uplifting songs. I'm not really into uplifting songs. But if you're into... I could appreciate that it would be a good song. Plenty of songs. Plenty of the most popular songs ever that I listen to. And I go, eh, doesn't do it for me. But I can understand why it does it for people. I Believe I Can Fly is one of... Mariah Carey's whole catalog is another. All the garbage music that my wife likes. I get why she likes it. It's just not for me, because it sucks, in my opinion. But that's just me. I'm right, but still, it's just me. But I Believe I Can Fly, I get it. I see why it's a hit. It's very uplifting. If you need a thing and know you can soar, and you just picture your arms up and blah, 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 and there you go. But behind all the music, R. Kelly was a real weirdo, it turns out. Real pervert. There was a documentary series. I forget. I think it was on like Real Network or whatever. I watched it back when it was out a few years ago, called Surviving R. Kelly. And it was about all of these allegations against R. Kelly, that he had sex slaves, he'd lure young girls into his life. You know, the guy's filthy rich and famous, and you can, that goes a long way. All the way back to the 50s, Jerry Lee Lewis was, and Chuck Berry were attracting young girls because they were famous. Fame was, and always has been, the ultimate aphrodisiac. And R. Kelly took it to a new level where, like, he married Aaliyah. The singer Aaliyah died in a plane crash a few years later. He married her when she was like 14 or 16 or something. Like, she was very young. And they had to quickly divorce or get it annulled because, obviously, you can't do that. That should have been a red flag for a lot of people, but sadly, it wasn't. So R. Kelly, this documentary series, comes out. He'd been arrested lots of times for sexual abuse of minors, of women, sexual slavery, so on and so forth. And often, when he'd been charged in the past, he'd beaten the charges, rape charges, whatever, you name it. Well, he didn't beat him this time. And he got convicted. He's facing something like 20 years in prison, which seems a little bit light. He's convicted of racketeering and a whole bunch of sex-related crimes. 20 years doesn't seem like enough, but it's something. It's something. Knowing that, and knowing all the allegations that have been made against R. Kelly, and I'm not, this is a family-friendly show. I'm not going to go into the details of them. You can find them online if you want. But somebody caught up. Here's a good rule of thumb. If you're in anywhere near public relations, if you're anywhere in a business where you're somebody's spokesman or you're a public official, there is nothing wrong with saying no comment. 99 times out of 100, saying no comment is the best way to go, especially if you're inclined to say something stupid. So you add something you shouldn't be commenting on and your propensity for saying something stupid, you should probably just learn the phrase, no comment. We're not going to talk about that. It's irrelevant to what, no, not going to do it. Instead, so many people in the public eye, you just turn a camera on them and they go, oh, the world must know my inner monologue. I must inform everybody. Such is the case with Chicago Democrat Representative Danny Davis. He's been in Congress in Washington since 1998. He's 80 years old. He ain't going anywhere. He's going to be a congressman for life. Somebody asked him about R. Kelly. And would Chicago, because R. Kelly lives in Chicago, would Chicago welcome him back? Now, again, R. Kelly noted for his music and for forced sex with minors, or alleged forced sex with minors. Actually, minors can't consent, so every sex with a minor is forced. For taking women into his home and cutting them off from their family and sort of using manipulation and brainwash and like all sorts of horrible things. Look it up for yourself. I don't want to get into the details. But he's known for that. You would think a member of Congress from Chicago would be aware of these at least allegations and would have a different answer, like, I'm not going to talk about the pervert who's going to spend the next 20 years in jail, R. Kelly. Instead, Democratic Congressman Danny Davis, again, another 80-year-old man going by Danny, seems a little suspect anyway. Democratic Congressman Danny Davis from Chicago says, no, R. Kelly will be welcomed back to Chicago after he serves his prison term.
I think he'll be welcomed back into Chicago as a person who can be redeemed. You know, I'm a big believer in what is called second chances.
Okay.
And I actually have a bill that we got passed called the Second Chance Act, which gives individuals the opportunities to be redeemed and to redeem themselves.
I need a shot at redemption. Don't want to end up in a cartoon graveyard. You can call me Al. He's quoting, you can call me Al. Really? The guy is a pervert. The guy is a longtime accused child molester. He's gotten away with it because the girls he's brainwashed by and large would not testify against him. They were uncooperative with police, with authorities. But he's been charged several times. You know, I don't think there are very many people falsely accused of child rape multiple times. I don't think that's the case. Not accused, but charged. And here's the Democrat going, well, I think he'll be welcome. Look, I'm a big believer in second chances. Really? Yes. You know, had Michael Jackson not died, he was the babysitter of my children. And had Michael Jackson not died, I would have still allowed him to babysit my children because I believe in second chances. I mean, I'd only let him babysit the girls because I know they're safe. But otherwise, I'd have perfectly fine second chances. Meanwhile, well, that's happening in Chicago. You think, who should immediately have nothing to say on this? You got a guy convicted of sex crimes. Who's Bill Cosby, right? You go, Bill Cosby should not be. Bill Cosby's spokesman, a guy named Andrew Wyatt, was out, it looks like Los Angeles on the street. TMZ caught up with him. Now, I don't know what Andrew Wyatt is being paid by Bill Cosby, but it's costing Andrew Wyatt, I assume, his soul, or he doesn't have one, or he is actually the devil incarnate. I don't know which. Probably not the latter, but at least has to be thrown out there as a possibility, considering the job he does. And Andrew Wyatt was asked about, because, you represent like one of the most prolific rapists in history. Sexual assaulters, drugger of women, you represent that. And R. Kelly is kind of giving you a run for the money, going for the title. Got to ask about that. You know, the entertainment world, when you think of really just horrible rapist sexual predators, you got Harvey Weinstein. I mean, you got a lot of them, but I'm talking about like the big ones. If you're going to make a molestation Mount Rushmore, you got Harvey Weinstein, you got Bill Cosby, no doubt. And now you've got R. Kelly. Before it was like, well, he was never convicted of anything. You can say that he was convicted of it now. And I don't know who else. I don't know who would make up the fourth. Who would make? Maybe Matt Lauer? Is he big enough still? But anyway, they are neck and neck in that one. And it seems as though R. Kelly is making a play for a Mount Rushmore spot. So, of course, the press is going to ask Bill Cosby's spokesman. Bill Cosby's spokesman should be smart enough to go, I'm not going to talk about that. Yeah, I'm not going to give you anything on this. I know why you're asking me. It's not like, oh, we should hear from the nation's dad from the 80s. No, we should hear from the dude with the most allegations of sexual assault and rape against him. We should hear from that dude. That's why they're asking you. But Andrew Wyatt was not smart enough, apparently, to see through that and go, I'm not going to comment. And so he said this.
Bill Cosby personally thought about this R. Kelly situation.
We talked about it today. And the first thing he said, he was like, look, the guy was railroaded. As he said that Gloria Allred did the same thing that she did with him. You parade women out and you stir up the public sentiment to go against him. And that's what they did to R. Kelly. My client was... Conviction was vacated by the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court because they saw the truth. And what we see in America today, you know, with R. Kelly, is an assault on black men. And this is an assault on successful black men who are doing great things.
It's an assault on successful black men who are doing great things. We go watch the Keep in the Closet videos and listen to that garbage song and tell me he's doing great things. Also, you know, there's the whole multiple molestations, the marrying of a teenager, all of that. But to sit there and say, first of all, Andrew Wyatt says, the state Supreme Court vacated my client's conviction. They saw that this was, no, they didn't see anything. They said that the prosecutor made a horrible deal, a stupid deal, with Cosby, that if he testified in this civil matter, that he would never be prosecuted for the crime of raping these women. It's a wildly stupid agreement that they made. And Bill Cosby thought, rightly so, I think his lawyer said, this will cost you $2 million in this civil suit, probably you'll lose. But you will be buying yourself permanent immunity in the state of Pennsylvania for all the raping that you did here. Because, all right, well, that's a pretty good deal. So, yeah, I'll do it. And then the new prosecutor came in and said, and read the transcript of his testimony and said, my God, he's admitting that he drugged these women and violated their bodies against their will. That we should prosecute that. And so he did. And it was a tap and put prosecution because there's Bill Cosby's own word saying, yeah, I did it. That's how I was. That's how I roll, man. And then the old deal came up and negated it. That's what it was. It's not that like the justices in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court looked at the case and said, well, Bill Cosby's an innocent man. He's been railroaded. No, Bill Cosby was convicted largely because Bill Cosby admitted to being a rapist under oath in the civil case. Really? Read the deposition. That was his damn. That's why they went after him. But the deal was you can't use that against him in a criminal case. That's why Bill Cosby's free. Now, why Andrew Wyatt believes that now is a good time to talk about R. Kelly just because he was asked is stupid. And if Bill Cosby believes this is the railroading of a successful black man, I got to wonder, what does Bill Cosby think is a justified prosecution of a successful black man? Was O.J. Simpson cutting the head off his wife and her friend? Is that justified or was that another successful, or that was an unsuccessful, I suppose, railroading attempt against a black man? And I would ask Andrew Wyatt, are all of the black girls who have accused R. Kelly over the years, were they lying? They have remarkably similar stories about it. There's a lot of videotape evidence. R. Kelly videotaped him. R. Kelly was videotaping himself, relieving himself on a teenage girl. And he was so famous at the time. I think R. Kelly really only got convicted in Chicago because he's less famous now. But he was not convicted at the time. He was acquitted at the time largely because he was famous. But he videotaped himself doing it. It wasn't like surreptitiously recorded. Nobody knew what was going on. No, it's in R. Kelly's house. It's R. Kelly's equipment. And that's what he's into with underage girls. And he got off. Was he railroaded then? Bill Cosby was the... You think that the teenage girls were lying? Were the videotapes lying? Is that how it works? Were all 50 or 60 or however many women who accused Bill Cosby of drugging them and violating them, they all lying? They all sitting around going, who can we go after? Let's get together and have a sewing circle and figure out who we can go after. And they somehow decided to settle on a completely irrelevant has been of a celebrity, Bill Cosby. You know what? He hasn't been famous in about 15, 20 years. Now, most people alive, they don't know who the hell Bill Cosby is. But the reruns are, let's go after him. You think that's a believable story? Or do you think the fact that Bill Cosby confessed to doing it to one woman under oath and part of a civil case in a deal to avoid criminal prosecution in the only case that was pending against him in whose statute of limitations had not run out. You think that's more likely? Then he said, all right, this is the last, all the other ones, the statute of limitations had run out. This is the only one they can get me on. If I testify in this civil case, then I'm scot-free. Which is more believable? I know where I fall on that. Well, that's why I don't eat pudding pops anymore. That, and they're not available, because they are delicious. I want to shift gears to Virginia just for a second. It was a debate last night between the Democrat, Terry McAuliffe, running for governor over there again, and Republican Glenn Youngkin. Took me a second to remember his name. Chuck Todd, the Ginger Avenger, moderated it, and it was poorly moderated. They said, I don't understand these timid, I hate timid people who are like, well, what do you think? What do you think? Like, speak up. Speak, I can ignore you, or I can discount you or whatever, but speak up so I can at least have the choice to do that. So I might have some respect for you in the middle of it. But there was a lot of talking over Chuck Todd while Chuck is going, let me just tell you, please, time is up, time is up, time is up. And they just keep talking, like, just yell at them. Turn their mic off. Anyway, Terry McAuliffe let the cat out of the bag about what Democrats think the role of parents should be in education. And it's none. It's shut your mouth and take what we give you. Listen, they should have no say at all.
I believe parents should be in charge of their kids' education.
Mr. McAuliffe, 30 seconds.
So first of all, this shows how clueless Glenn Youngkin is. He doesn't understand what the laws were because he's never been involved here in helping Virginia. But it was not. The parents had the right to veto bills, veto books, Glenn, not to be knowledgeable about it, also take them off the shelves. And I'm not going to let parents come into schools and actually take books out and make their own decision.
You vetoed it.
So, yeah, stop the bill that I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach.
I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach. You just shut up and do and take what we give you. Meanwhile, Fairfax County Public Schools had to remove a whole bunch of books because they were found to be obscene in the library that they were teaching these kids. Lawn Boy, Gender Queer, A Memoir, etc., etc., that are so graphic I can't even tell you what is in them. So, but teacher, parents should just shut up and take what the teachers are giving them, according to Terry McAuliffe. This is how the Democratic mindset in action. A couple last things before we run out of time here. Seattle Times newspaper, nowhere near the southern border, but very liberal, of course, probably living in fear of if they say anything not, you know, sufficiently progressive, they'll be attacked and burned by Antifa and BLM. They ran an op-ed yesterday. They tweeted it out. Images of Border Patrol agents on horseback whipping Haitian asylum seekers at the southern border have reminded Americans of the racist origins and current practices of our nation's immigration enforcement agencies, writes Angelina Snodgrass Godey. G-O-D-O-Y, in an op-ed. Now, that whipping them has been proven to be a lie. At this, the White House is still sticking with it, and apparently Angelina Snodgrass Goaty is still going for it, too. And the Seattle Times, I don't know of any other outlet in the world where you can write an op-ed based on a lie as if it's true. What's funny is they've got pictures of the border, right? I retweeted this. You can see it for yourself on my Twitter page. They got pictures of a border crossing, Haitians coming across the Rio Grande, and there's 3-4 officers on horseback. The dudes coming across the border are carrying takeout food. They're carrying styrofoam containers. That guy's got 5 of them. Another guy's got 4 of them in a bag, and he looks like he's dropping them into the bag. They're not being whipped. They're not being chased. They're delivering Mexican food from Mexico. They're bringing over styrofoam containers of Montezuma's revenge. We're so oppressive in this country that you can deliver Mexican food from Mexico at our border and cross back as many times as you want and literally no consequences. No consequences whatsoever. But we're horrible and racist, and don't you forget it. God help. Speaking of horrible and racist, this is the liberal mindset. This is a guy named Matthew Dowd. He used to be chief, chief political analyst for ABC News. He was the George W. Bush administration official, of course. All the really god-awful Republicans come from the Bush administration. They really do. Both of them. Both Bush administrations. And Matthew Dowd has been working at ABC ever since. He's a big-time lib now. He's like the Michael Steele, but he's white, of ABC News. And he's done nothing but great. All he does is block conservatives on Twitter. Anybody gets a mild criticism of Matthew Dowd, and he blocks you. He blocks you. He's the thinnest-skinned loser on the face of the earth. He has decided to run for lieutenant governor of Texas. And you think, running for lieutenant? Who the hell wants to run for lieutenant governor? In Texas, the way that it's set up, the lieutenant governor actually has a lot of power. I'm not going to explain it. If you care enough, you can go look it up. But the lieutenant governor in Texas actually has a lot of governing power. He's a white guy. He's a typical bald white guy, rich, liberal white guy living in Texas. Well, just for fun, you can find this online yourself. He, as an ABC News, before he was fired for making a joke about a funeral from ABC News, on September 30th, 2018, so just about 3 years ago, he wrote an opinion column for abcnews.com, the headline of which, "Us white male Christians need to step back and give others room to lead." Huh? The subheadline, "ABC News' Matthew Dowd asks white Christian men to rethink leadership." Yeah, his piece goes on to talk about how there are just too many horrible, awful white people in positions in this country. And as long as they keep stepping up, there's a possibility they'll get elected. So what they really need to do is step back and let black and brown and off-white people run for office. And then 3 short years later, the next opportunity in Texas, this guy throws his hat into the ring, exposing his bald white head. You gotta love it. You gotta love the irony there. Only he could do it. He's the only one. Well, Texas, you can have him. I'm done with him. He ain't gonna win anywhere. He's an insufferable person. Anyway, that is all the time we have. I appreciate the use of your ears. Have a great day. We'll be back here tomorrow to do it all over again. See you then.
No one said that to me that I can recall.